Hi. I'm Ted Friedman from KPFA, and I'm making this presentation on behalf of Deborah Speer from KFCF in Fresno, who can't be here today. She's coming in late tonight. And she has a proposal to preserve a very unique and vital relationship between KFCF and Pacifica, which has been gone on since the early 70s. In particular, KFCF, which is in Central California in Fresno, has a very unusual relationship with KPFA, in which they broadcast, the agreement is that they broadcast 75% of all KPFA coverage. And KFCF raises its own funds. It's not a monetary relationship between KPFA and KFCF. It's quite independent, but they, in effect, serve to carry the KPFA signal to a total of about one-third of all of California. This is sponsored by the KFCF is a part of the Fresno Free College Foundation. And KFCF has had over the years a representative on the KPFA board. And it's had a very vital role in the recent crisis when KPFA was shut down forcibly. KFCF continues to broadcast. And also when Democracy Now! Was removed from Pacifica, KFCF people managed to bring down the signal from the KU satellite and allowed KPFA to continue to broadcast Democracy Now! And this, I won't go into the details, but it served to help preserve the Pacifica mission. And the entire, and I think it played a vital role in saving the network. It's important that we maintain, preserve this relationship which exists, and it doesn't fall into the category of affiliate. Deborah has presented a proposal to be incorporated into the bylaws, which in effect will create a new category between stations called associate. And I think Susan is handing out copies of the proposal to the board. And I just want to say on behalf of Deborah that we should try to incorporate that into any form of the bylaws that's adopted. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. I think then we've heard from every group. Obviously, we haven't heard from every single individual who has a thought about bylaws. But I think we've heard from all the groups that have been meeting and working and hammering out their proposals and thoughts, except Washington, of course. And we're sorry that their representative couldn't make it. What instead of beginning the discussion amongst the board members, if this is okay, I think that this might be the best time to break. Well, actually, let me just modify that. If anybody on the board has any clarifying question, not to get into an exchange, I agree with you, I disagree with you, but any clarifying question from any of the people who made presentations, maybe we should try and get those answered right now. That my thought was that then we could break. There will be this buffet lunch downstairs, which for everybody in the room, everybody who's here, will be at a reduced rate. It's an expedited, I don't know how they're setting it up, but probably like a bag lunch kind of thing where you can buy a lunch and then, you know, buffet. Okay. Hopefully people can eat fast or bring their food back up here, because we don't have, you know, a lot of time. But that will begin at 1 o'clock. So I'd like to break a little bit before one so people can actually get downstairs and start eating precisely at 1 o'clock and not waste a moment. And then I don't know how long this is going to take, but I don't think we should take more than 45 minutes for a break. What I'm hoping is that people can just bring their food up here if you haven't finished eating. So then we can just, you know, keep the conversation going if that's okay. So what I'd like to do is break by 10 to 1. It's now 12:30, which would give us opportunity to ask any clarifying questions or if there's any other information that the board needs. Carol?
Yeah, I have a question. In two of the proposals, the PAC and the KPFK, I'm tangled up in wires. I'm a little unclear, particularly in the KPFK committee model, which I have read, and I got a little tied up in the details of how the program council idea works there. And let me tell you what I think I understood you said, and if I'm wrong, would you correct me? It is that you have a model of an elected program council where when the election takes place at election time, the local station board members identify whether they want to serve, or candidates identify whether they want to serve on a program council or an administrative council of the local station board. Is that correct? That they're running for election for the local station board, but saying which division of the station board they want to serve on? Or did I dream that?
Okay, could you, in the briefest, I was outside when you began your question, forgive me. But if I understand your question properly.
Well, maybe Tom could begin to answer.
Okay.
Oh. Maybe I've got him conflated. Yeah.
All right, and this is on behalf of PAC, but it's very similar to the one for the unity. Mm-hmm. And that is that we see a station board as a totality. In that, there's going to be two standing committees, the administrative budget and the program committee. They, just like any committee of any board, there you can make, you know, committees, and therefore, whatever they come out with has to be approved by the total board.
My question is, how are they elected?
How are they elected?
Are they elected in separate elections or one election?
No, it's one election.
It's one election. However, you're going to be voting for station board members, and you're also going to be voting for listener sponsor members that are going to be on the program committee.
So not on the station board.
Correct. Correct.
Carol, just to run that past again, the station board is elected as a whole, and it divides its own members among its committees. Just as it normally would. There happen to be two standing committees, and certain people will choose to or be elected to go on to the program committee. And
so then you're proposing a separate body also be elected, a separate program council?
No.
No.
No. It's a little less complex and a little more complex than that, both. Okay. What happens is that there are two basic, the way that the program council is composed, okay, is what's a little confusing to you. Let's just take it one step at a time, okay? The first thing that happens is that the station board is elected.
Right.
Okay? Then the station board members divide themselves up according to committee. Okay, so
right.
You got that. Your main two standing committees
got
are
that.
Our program council and the administrative council. We also, though, have another provision that allows for direct election of listeners who are running for nothing but participating as voting members in that program committee.
Of the
so
local
it's on the same ballot
board.
Of the local station board. So they're part of that committee, and they vote on the resolutions of that committee, but they do not vote on station board business, including they do not vote on station board business that their committee has put before the station board. You see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Is there any further need for clarification?
No, I think I get it.
Thank you.
It would work procedurally is that in the annual mail ballot, there would be people who are running for these positions. It would be designated on the mail ballot, and pretty similar to how it would be done where the local station board candidates would designate their simultaneous candidacy for Pacifica National Board. There would be people on there who are either station members or the listener group, which are, as the total proposal is, more advisory because of the FCC rules. They would designate that they're running for the programming committee.
Thank you.
Okay, yes.
This is for Ken from the dissenting or the, yeah, the dissenting.
Yeah.
Did you say something about an appointed regent or something? I wasn't quite sure what you meant.
Well, it's very difficult to come up with the proper word for this, but George Barnstone was the IPNB representative who was supposed to have what we would call titular authority, convening authority for the KPFT Bylaws Governance Committee. But at some point in the process, and I'm not sure how many months ago that was, he sort of relinquished that role to Greg Gieselman. And I don't have a good name for that person, so I just use the term regent.
Oh, okay. And just so I'm clear in my head, your main objection has to do with the diversity requirement, sort of what you're saying.
There are actually two. There are two aspects of the diversity requirements that contradict our work, and there are two aspects of the selection process for IPNB members that contradict our work.
Okay.
So those are the two issues that are central to the...
Okay. Yeah. And I just wanted to ask Ted, thanks, Ken, what is the narcissism of the Interim Pacifica National Board? I want to know what that
Ted
is.
Ted Weiska. Ted.
She said?
Yeah, Ted.
I do mind.
Ted.
Yeah. It's that you don't see a role for volunteers at the very grassroots level of committee involvement. Most of the presentations here today, including the one from Los Angeles a moment ago, talks about people being elected to these various committees. Here in Houston, as an example, and I've made it many times before, there is an organization called the Houston Livestock Show and Rodeo. They have 160 different committees and 13,000 volunteers. That kind of a model, you know, it's very ambitious, and it may take many years. They go back to the 1920s when they got started. But here in Houston, for example, this past week, one of our committees, the Outreach Committee of 9 people, voted to join the Houston Peace and Justice Center. The local board then voted to endorse that committee resolution. The people, the 9 people on the Outreach Committee, are just volunteers who show up at the radio station and get involved. They made a recommendation to the local board. The local board then makes that recommendation to the station manager, who signs off on it, and then we go ahead and join it. And the person who ultimately represents KPFT on the Houston Peace and Justice Center board may be a member of the committee. It may not be a member of the local board. It may just be one of the grassroots participants from that outreach committee. And we are saying, to strengthen Pacifica, we need to allow people who are supporters of the Pacifica mission, people who are either by virtue of the time they put in or by their subscription money, they need to be able to play a role in recommending policy to the local board that then recommends policy to the station manager or to the national board that then enacts that kind of stuff. But we don't want to diss individuals that were involved in this process. You know, we've had wide open participation in the bylaws process. We want to continue that theme of things.
Okay, thank you. Are there other questions, Teresa?
This is Teresa Allen, and I have a question of John Sheridan or Mary Bird. When you talked about power sharing and you talked about the power of local boards, I'm just trying to figure this out. You talked about the local boards having so much power to hire, to fire, you know, to remove the general manager, to oversee the budget, to set programming policy, to send reps to the PNB. Okay. If you have staff, large numbers of staff, on the local board, which I guess would be a governing board, what happens if your staff, for example, has a grudge, the ones that are on the governing board, lab, what happens if they have a grudge against the station manager? Couldn't they exert a great deal of power? I'm just asking that question because I want to know how you would deal with that power struggle.
Okay, thank you. And Gary?
I think it would be dealt with just in the same way as if a listener, which does happen, had a grudge against a station manager, and there are ample examples of that. So these things may happen, but because you have enough of them, if you have one appointed rep, and it happens to be a union rep, which in one of the models is the case, that might be significant. But if you have about a third of them, and they're all elected, assuming that you have a decent station manager, but since the consensus of the local group is to hire that station manager, the vast majority will not have a grudge about that station manager because it was not opposed top down by some people who know nothing of the station. So the likelihood of this intervening, if you have shared power on a local level is very, very remote. And if it happened, it could be dealt with by the rest of the staff, if not by the board.
Thank you.
Mary, if you could, I was going to ask you this earlier, if you could go back to the microphone and help me on this. And any other unpaid staff people, this is Dave Fertig, any of the other unpaid staff people that might want to add, I'm curious about the number of hours, insofar as there might be a position on either a local or national board for unpaid staff. In my proposal, I suggested perhaps, for example, 25 hours within 3 months. Certainly that would represent quite a substantial commitment of time. The proposals vary in numbers. I'm curious what your feeling is, Mary, relative to the number of hours that an unpaid staff person should have performed in order to qualify as a, quote, unpaid staff, unquote.
Let's see, 25 hours in 3 months. I've got to do the math. That's no. Some models have said 5 hours per week. So let me see. 25 hours a month is...
Three months.
Okay, that's
eight
about
8 hours
a month.
Right. 8 and a third hours a month.
I think that there'd be flexible feeling about that. I think that's rather a small amount. I think maybe from 2 to 5 hours a week would be more reasonable. Or 5 hours a week does not seem unreasonable to me, and that was the standard that was used for a long time. So I think that's what I would say.
Well, I think the issue in a lot of this, obviously, is setting the bar high enough but not too high.
So that they have enough station involvement that they're not simply listeners only without the perspective from being inside the station.
Bob, I think, is another unpaid programmer. Maybe wants to speak to this.
Yeah, just another fact to answer Dave's question is that there's been a union contract at WBAI for about 15 years, and the definition in that contract of unpaid staff are people who have worked either 10 hours in the preceding month or 20 hours in the preceding 2 months. So that would seem to be a reasonable standard.
Thanks a lot, Bob.
Okay.
Well, this is Rayla Forrest. The question I have is, when you have a station that has a pre-existing union contract, how do you resolve those issues without violating the contract? How do I accommodate an existing contract representing members?
How do you resolve which issues without violating the contract? I'm sorry, I don't quite understand the question.
When you're defining what is a worker, who is a producer, as you're setting hours, if there's any conflict between that definition being, as Bob just laid it out, within a union contract, how do you see resolving that?
Well, there's not actually a conflict because they're two different things. We used to be the unpaid staff, and of course in BAI people were also members of the union, so that very handily solved that. But there's not really a conflict. A union job is for a certain number of hours, and it's a paid position. We're talking about non-union people or unpaid staff.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but the only station that has unpaid workers that have a contract is WBAI. Am I correct?
Unfortunately, correct. I think that's true.
Okay.
But we are working toward changing that. We do have an unpaid staff organization, by which we really mean non-union people. And we are trying to work toward that, and we hope the whole network would do the same. Have I answered your question?
I believe so. I believe for you.
Okay.
Are.
All right.
Yeah. I'd like to speak to that for just a quick minute. KPFA has a... I'm Chandra Houtman. KPFA has a personnel and policy committee, and one of the things we're doing is that we're working with the unpaid staff council, and we're working with members of the paid staff at KPFA and the listeners and of course the board in developing a model of all staff protocol for unpaid as well as paid staff. We're looking at the union contract. We're looking at the unpaid staff organization's prior bylaws and the new ones that they're developing. We're working with management, and we're also in consultation with Dave Fertig, who's the chair of the National Board Personnel Committee. So we're trying to come up with a unified policy that could apply to all staff, paid and unpaid, and be approved by all the staff and the workers and the listeners. Thank you.
Thank you.
I don't know whether it's just me feeling antsy, but I think there will be issues with us doing this throughout the network. I'm an unpaid staff person, so I definitely think it's great, but I'm just saying that's a reality we're going to have to deal with. Yeah.
Right. Okay, so let's not let's hear from Rob. Rob has a question, and I think that's the last one for now.
Either Mary or Chandra, I just would like to understand it. It seems to me that what we're hearing is a very, very bureaucratic structure that parallels station management. I'm just concerned about, in your view, what role does creativity that comes from the programmers have? I really am concerned about that.
It probably sounds unduly bureaucratic.
Don't touch it.
I'll just stand like this. Probably okay. Sounds unduly bureaucratic because of when we talk about these things, but in fact it's fairly a simple thing and it worked fairly simply. And as to creativity, I can only speak from my experience with other people and my own experience. If you are freed up by being part of the whole system and you are included, then you are free to be creative. You are not constantly looking to see, have you got someone who's above you that is going to stifle this, or who do you have to answer to, and so on, because you're answering to the whole body of all of us. And that's what integrated power sharing really is about. It's a collaborative power, not a top-down hierarchical power that's imposed without voluntary participation. So it's much more creative, I think. I mean, it frees of people to be much more creative. They don't have those constant yokes over their heads. Have I answered your question?
Okay. Okay, Rob.
Yes.
Rob. Okay, thanks, Rob. Okay, one more question, then we're going to break. We obviously have the whole afternoon for discussion of these issues, so we're not ending this, but Rob, Ray?
Yeah, actually this is for the presentation by the constituency model. You can decide who'll answer it. You mentioned that there would be two, each individual voting would be allowed two different constituencies. Can you clarify that a little bit? Also, how do you guarantee, I mean, we all obsessed about a coup coming from the top, but there's also the possibility that there could be a coup coming from the bottom. How do you guarantee that people running would be progressive? I mean, I understand this is the core of your concern.
Voting.
Yes.
Regarding the vote, our proposal is that the staff who's already in the House, hence has power, can self-determine whether they're paid or unpaid staff, and they get one vote. The other people, they also self-determine. So upon registration, by the way, every person who is to vote in our model has to register. The people who are already listeners or who are already on our rosters can register by mail. The other guy come in person so that we see that it's a real person out there. And when they register, what we call the general listenerships, including the mission constituents, they choose. I can choose to be Arab and woman. I can choose to be from New York or at large. And when a person registers, actually, no, I will be only staff because I am staff, but I'm saying just someone else. And I will get one vote and it will be unpaid. So other people can register to be one of two constituents. So it can be either one of two mission constituents or a mission and a geographic general listenership or a mission, whatever combination. And by the way, when people, and then when you come and you are voting, you have to vote within your constituency. You can't change your mind because suddenly there's a coalition of a bunch of progressive that have pushed forth a nominee for at large. You cannot suddenly say, gee, I'd rather have that than my constituents. No. The decision has to be made before, and then you go and you vote for these constituents. And also oversee all of that, not make a decision, by the way, as to, oh, gee, this is indeed a nominee that has a track record, for instance, of the progressive work, which is a requirement of every nominee to show. A nominee will put forth such credentials for everybody to see, but we recommend having an election board that would facilitate collecting this different information, checking that you registered and you voted for the same constituents and things like that. And Cyrene will talk more about who we choose as an election board.
Okay, let me ask you, what I think Ray is getting at, and we've talked about this before, and I use Mooney. Any Moonies in the house? So I won't be getting on anybody's nerve. Yeah, Errol's just moonstruck. But, okay, I'm a Mooney, and I decide I want to take over WBAI. And I got, 10,000 people who will vote for me that I see every time I go to the Mooney church. Now, what's to stop me from doing this?
Well, I think one of the things our model offers is it pulls from a variety of constituencies, including the at-large, there are, in fact, 13, in terms of the mission constituency, there are 13 categories, women, LGBT, youth, yeah, so on and so forth. I think it's sufficiently diverse. We don't have a category for Moonies unless there are unless there are 10,000 Moonies who are also LGBT and or handicapped or differently abled.
I have a question.
There are.
Let it finish.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
No.
Did it finish? Or?
Yeah.
Okay, folks, I know there's more questions, but we're running out of time. So okay. Did you finish in response to her?
Yeah. Are you? Did I? Is there something I didn't cover?
No. Carol has one question, and that's it. We're going to break after Carol's question.
You said that the nominees need to demonstrate credentials and that some organized body, will choose who can be a nominee and who cannot.
No.
Suppose I apply to be a woman in the women's constituency to run. Uh-huh. And how do I get to run? Well, you have to look at my resume and see that I've been an activist or what?
We actually have an election board, or we're suggesting that the IPMB prepare some guidelines, which will then be passed on to the station board. The station board would select activist organizations with a good track record. For example, in New York, we were thinking of CCR, Center for Constitutional Rights, because we know their work. They would serve as an arbiter of the election process. But your nomination, per se, doesn't have to be approved by a particular person or by a particular group. What we're doing for the nominations is we're asking anyone who's interested in running to prepare at least 100-word writing on their understanding of the principles and the mission of Pacifica, as well as a 500-word writing on their as well as a 500-word writing on their vision for New Pacifica. And these writings will, in fact, comprise a voter education brochure that will be distributed among the membership. And there will additionally be debates, at least one in each constituency.
My question is, I won't be screened out.
No one will be screened out.
No, I can run if I apply and I provide the documentation.
And then folks will hear you.
All right.
Not just that. We also recommend in our inreach and the whole process of election, our model, that there'll be all these different forums in which they are very fair for every representation, in which people talk to their issues and kind of talk about their track record, but also to be considered between a candidate and a nominee, people have to have 50 people recommend them that are from their constituents. So we feel that this cross requirement pushes it, but you're not ruled out because a select body chooses that. Again, the election board is just to facilitate the legality of the processing and to help alleviate disputes.
Okay, we need to break.
One minute. I just wanted to say, with regard to the program council, there is a program council written into the contract that's still being recognized at WBAI. So if you want more information about that, it is not a perfect body by any means. But if you want some more information about that, we can talk about that later as well.
Okay. We're going to break. Again, I want to thank everybody who made presentations. This was an incredibly civil set of presentations. So I think it's very, very helpful. Again, downstairs on the first floor, I assume it's on the first floor, there is a buffet lunch. You just have to say you're with the Pacifica meetings, and it's at a reduced rate. I don't know what that rate is. We're going to convene in 45 minutes, regardless of the number of people in the room. Okay? So please, whatever.